Satsang with Maitreya, January
12, 2002. Good morning. Welcome to the mission of Maitreya. This room belongs to the new revelation to humanity, a revelation that unifies all the religions of the world and brings unity to all religions and hopefully eventually humanity. Probably most of you wondered, if there is one God, why there is so many religions, why there is so many separation and disunity? Of course, one of them is because each religion has a specific message for humanity, and each religion has that message only. And when you put all these messages together, as the mission of Maitreya has done, then you see the whole picture. Of course, always the story comes up. It's the same thing as the elephant and the five blind men. Each blind man holds a part of the elephant, and he or she said, this is what the elephant looks like. One holds the trunk and said it looks like a hose. The other one had the tail and said it looks like a broom, and on and on. And eventually a man with an eye came and said, well, all of you are correct. You are each have a part of the elephant, and if you want to know what the elephant looks like, it looks like the whole those parts plus body and more. So we now have the revelation that shows that each religion of the world have been a part of a greater truth that we call it eternal divine path. Each of these religions brought a part of this path, and when you put all this path together, you see the whole picture, and also this path not only unifies all religions of the world, this is the fastest path to salvation and God. If you have been in our website, and I can see it's posted right there, but from Mission 777, that if you go to that website, the first thing you will see is a sign that we call it the greatest sign, and our teaching is based on that greatest sign. The greatest signs include all religions of the world, and if you look at it, you will see the dot forms as the first sign of the creation, or imbalance in the creation, and that dot turns to the arching, that it turns very fast and eventually it expands with the lotusika, which is the whole manifestation of God in the manifested world. And the thought that you see is what scientists call Big Bang and the beginning of the creation. And then you see the arching, that is when God comes in its fullest form and will look at the universe and sees that it's chaos and darkness. And that is what the Bible said, and the darkness was upon the face of the deep. And God decides to bring those dark part of the universe under his control and eventually help him to lead back to the balance of the universe. That is the goal of the life of each person, to go back to the balance and go back to God and become one with him, and help the whole universe to be the same. Now, what is the eternal divine path? Was that God sends his spirit to that darkness because he wanted to know what that darkness contained, how it can be helped. If you want to know the situation, you go to it. You travel into that situation, and you study that situation, and eventually you come with the solution. So God's spirit comes to the darkness, and that is very well goes with the idea of the Christians, that God came to man. And of course that didn't happen, you know, by Christ alone, but it happened in the very beginning of the creation, that God's spirit goes to the darkness and goes through the eternal divine path. What happens is it goes to the darkness, it starts meditating in this darkness. So what is this darkness, you know, made of? Why it's here? Why it cannot realize that it can go back and go to that blissful state that God is? As it meditated and realized itself, you know, it realized, wow, there is a lower nature in man that prevents man from seeing the light, seeing the beauty of, you know, returning to the Godhead. And therefore, that meditation is evoking the spiritual forces, and that is the first sign, as the I Ching in the very bottom of the greatest sign. That awakening of the spiritual forces means know thyself. In every religion, it's recommended to know thyself. Bible said, be still and know that I am God. I am, which is you, is the same as God, which is God. And in a Hindu religion, they call what Atman, with the small a, and Atman with the a, with the small, with the large a, they are the same. So the self and the God are the same. So we have to realize that really we are one already with God, or at least meditate and awaken our virtual forces and become one with Him. That's the first step of the eternal divine path, awakening of virtual forces, which is related to all the mystical paths on earth. Mystical paths are Hinduism, Buddhism, Kabbalah, mystical Christianity, Sufis, and any other teaching that teaches us to awaken our spiritual forces by meditation, concentration, chanting, dancing, and all the things that makes us awaken our spiritual forces. Now, we awaken our spiritual forces. Now what? Is that the goal of the life? That's most of the mystical paths. That's it. You just meditate and you let a drop of the water and you fall into the ocean and become ocean. But God, in His revelation, says, no, if you do that, I will spew you out of my mouth, in Revelation chapter 3, that you have also to go to your first love, which is the society and people, and start helping them out. And that is why we can see God sends the New Testament. Actually, most of the religions before the flood of Noah was very selfish way of I only want to get to God, and manipulating the powers and energies to the selfishness. That's what the flood of Noah came and destroyed them, and the third eye was closed, and the man became only two eyes or more flesh. Now this man is much more under control of God, and God revealed the mystical path to Noah, actually, after the flood of Noah, and eventually those teachings came to us as a mystical path, and the Upanishads, and eventually Buddhism, and all the mystical religions all over the world. Now, after we have a super, but God didn't just stop there and give the revelation to Noah and says, that's it. The mystical path is the end of it. He also chose Abraham, you know, for a purpose. And Abraham put an example for the humanity, for the creation of the communities. God was trying to create the 12 tribes of Israel. What's a tribe? Tribe is a community. That tribe is based on God's law and God's revelation and God's ways. And that is what the Old Testament is conveying to humanity, that after the awakening of the forces, you direct that energy throughout the creation of the community of light, is based on God and His laws. So the second step in the eternal divine path is to direct our energy and realization and everything we have toward the creation of the communities of life. That is the second step we have to take. Now we want to create these communities of life. Now what? But how are we going to do it? Sacrifice is necessary in the communities of life. If everybody in the community says, what is it for me, what is it for me, it is not going to happen. And sacrifice is the symbolized for the sacrifice was Christ came and brought the teaching of Christianity, and He put an example for the everybody that sacrifice and not being self-centered is needed in order to come into life to be created. And of course He had other missions as well. He gathered the people and also released the grace to humanity. And therefore, the next step in the eternal divine path is in the community we have to see to direct most of energy and ability toward the creating a community which everybody is more comfortable. As more communities are created, more people are going to participate in the communities, and communities are going to be stronger and best place to live on earth. So the next step is realizing that you should not become self-centered in community, but become community-centered and eventually God-centered and see if the whole universe is a part of you and your community. And of course the next step is you do a lot of work, go out to creation community, you sacrifice, and nothing happens. But of course you become depressed, you say, God, you know, why am I doing all this thing? Why am I not seeing any result? Of course, being attached to the result of your action is also a pitfall, because it makes you, you know, become depressed and or related if it happens. Therefore, the next step is to surrender the result to God and say, okay, I'll do my job. You know, I surrender the result to God. And even better than surrendering is realizing that God is doing to you. God is the one who is not selfish. God is the one who is, you know, coming through and doing great, great things. And therefore, He is completely, He is the doer. Therefore, you are not attached to the result. And that is the sign of the Islam. Islam comes from the word taslim, to mean to be surrendered and submissive to God. Therefore, being by submissive and surrendered to God, you will not become depressed and you will not become elated. You become a steady mind person. As the Bhagavad Gita says, the realized person neither goes too high, neither goes too low. If you're going too high and too low, you're not in a steady mind. You have to meditate and know, why not? Why am I not steady? Why am I going up and down? Why am I not, why am I depressed? Why am I not able to see my way out of this? And surrendering that submission is a great way to do it. And now you awaken your spiritual forces, you want to create the communities of light, and you know what the communities of light is, based on the eternal divine path. You sacrifice for it, you surrender and submit yourself to God, but you direct all this energy to a very small part of the universe and say, this is where I will put my energy into. You become narrowness. That is narrowness of the mind, and now narrowness of the mind, of course, will create again suffering to humanity, and everybody says, no, this is my part, and everybody else, if you come close, I'm going to bite them, and it's just a dog mentality that, oh, nobody can come to my territory, and all that. But you have to expand our mind, become universalist, and realize that God is everything. If God is everything, how can I separate one part of it from the other? How can I say, no, these people are okay, those are not okay? You know, we can't, because even those people you say they are not okay, they are the part of God, and you have to realize that, you know, you should also include them in the kingdom of heaven on earth. So with this realization, you become a universalist. You shatter all knowledge of the mind, any separative thing that separates you, from nationality, gender, religion, everything that separates you, you shatter them completely, and you realize that the whole universe is your home, and God is your father and mother, and your goal is to bring all of them back to Godhead, and therefore you do not look a separate way of being people on earth or anywhere in the universe. And that is the path that has been, that is the message was revealed with the Baha'i teaching. Bab and Baha'u'llah brought that message to humanity, message of universalism. If you awaken your spiritual forces, you direct your energy and your realization to prayer of the communities of light. If you sacrifice for the communities and become surrendered and submissive to God and become universalist, you have shattered all the knowledge of the mind, any pitfall in your spiritual path, any self-centeredness and egotism that might keep you from become one with the rest of the humanity or universe, and you will create the communities that everybody is going to be in a very good position. And if you expand that and cover most of the earth, eventually a hierarchy will emerge from this community, which will bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. And if you follow these five steps to the universalism, you become an elect. That is what God was talking about. My elect, they will bring the kingdom of heaven on earth. They will inherit the earth. And that is how you become an elect, by following eternal divine. That's why you see, this mission, there is no dogma. You either follow the eternal divine path or you don't. If you follow the eternal divine path, you will see benefit. If you don't follow the eternal divine path, no matter how much experience that you have, no matter how many realization you have, no matter how many times you tell me that how wonderful you are, doesn't make any difference. The difference is, do you follow the eternal divine path? If you do, as you can see, you will reach a lot of benefits from it, and eventually you become an elect, which is the sixth seal. And these are the elects that God is calling on. This is room is the room to call the elect. Those who see the eternal divine path, they see, understand the wonderful wonder of it. They realize it unifies all religions of the world. That is why the religions were different to this point. God was sending all these revelations separately for a reason, for a purpose, that no other religion, no other revelation, no other person, no one has the whole truth until this revelation comes, which is the revelation of the seventh angel and the opening of the seventh seal and the revelation of the book sealed with the seventh seal. Again, you see, you see this very clearly, you see it is God's doing, and therefore God exists and is in control, and He will bring His kingdom on earth. Of course, you know, it will be a struggling, but really our fight is, we leave God fight our fight, and we just march on toward the creation of the promise of life and bring the kingdom of heaven on earth, and we don't let the negativity that some try to bring to this mission affect us at all, because our focus is in God, our focus is not on them. And if their focus was on God also, they would have understood and realized that what we have here is from God. So this is basically their teaching, the divine path. Of course, the elects will bring the kingdom of heaven on earth, that will accelerate the progress of many people in those communities, and they will reach pure consciousness, and eventually the elect also will reach pure consciousness or return to balance, which is the birthright of every person to go back to Godhead. Therefore, we can see that the path of the accelerated way to return home is being given, and the elects are being gathered, the scriptures are being read to humanity, the elect are hearing it, and they are gathering and coming. And the eagles are going to be here very soon, and they are also here, many of them are already here. So if you feel that you are an elect, you are an eagle, you have been called for a mission, you are welcome to the mission, and we hope that you will join this wonderful journey that we can take together. And if you are from other religion and you do not appreciate what we have, go to our website and prove it to yourself. Everybody should do that. Everybody has to prove it. Don't listen to anyone. But the revelation, fulfillment of the prophecies, opening of the seventh seal, opening of the books, sealed with the seventh seal, coming of the seventh angel, all should help you to make your own decision. Don't listen to anybody else in your path but God, which is within yourself and will guide you. And if you do not believe after you left the website and you still believe that your religion is the best, good luck. We wish you a lot of good luck, and we wait and you wait and see who is the truthful one. In this point, I'd like to make a couple of points here from previous sad songs and a few things that I'd like to discuss with everyone. There was a gentleman that asked me about the crucifixion last week. I guess he misunderstood me. He is apparently going to the other places and telling that he do not believe in crucifixion. That is not correct. His question was that Muslims do not believe that Christ died on cross. There is no discussion or disagreement that Christ was crucified and he was suffered great sufferings, and he was crucified and nailed to his hands and feet actually you can see the those cases of the nails being, you know, in the body. Actually, you can see it in my body. I can show it to the people who will come to the mission. You know, they will see the nail. The cases are still there. So the crucifixion is correct. There is no doubt about it that Christ was crucified, was did he die on the cross? That is the argument between Christian and Muslim and also other groups. Other groups also don't believe that he died on the cross. And of course, according to our teachings, the most important was what was his message. Okay, nothing else is important but the message. So the did he die on the cross or not? Since the prophets later are more uptake in the truth, you know, we told him that probably he should, you know, believe in a Muslim or Quran than other things that is from the very older time. So we are not. We do believe in crucifixion happened and he suffered. Did he die or not? That is the controversial part of his crucifixion. And some people say he stayed alive even after crucifixion and guided his disciple for a long time, 50 years or so. So that gentleman, if he's not here, tell him that we do believe that crucifixion happened. But if he dies or not, that we don't even get to it because it's not that important. But he did stay in the earth for 3 days and three nights. So he fulfilled his what he gave as the only sign of his legitimacy. Okay, and also we are here and we give Christ said, "Do not put, you know, throw your fuel in, you know, to the public, or many people will stumble on them." There are a lot of people that are criticizing or bringing negativity to the mission. They do not see the pure and beauty that mission has brought to them. We suggest to them go and read our website and the teaching and realize it's from God, and do not stumble on our pure and try to bring negative things and questions that is really doesn't feel good at all. But then you know there is so much truth have come to you, to humanity, and we suggest them they become more positive and see the pure and beauty instead of seeing that you know negative thing that the preachers and their religion have told them. I have another item here that prophecies. You have to also realize that the prophecies are fulfilled. Okay, there was a question the gentleman asked me about the prophecies, and I referred him to John, our expert in prophecies, and he keeps saying that I didn't answer his question. When I received the revelation, the most important was the message. It was beautiful, it was wonderful, it was unifying, it was great beauty in it. And then other people came and brought the prophecies to us. So they are more expert in the prophecy than teaching. If you have a question about the teaching, I will answer you. But if you are asking about the prophecies or my genealogy, that is other people are more expert than I am. I even didn't know that I am the ascendant of the King David and Prophet Muhammad until a couple of months ago. You know, it wasn't important to me. I didn't, the most important, and I've been at this for the last 20 years. For more than 20 years, and never was that important to me that I am. So the gentleman who brought the genealogy, he's more expert than I am. He already knew even before I, you know, he told me. So I referred you to them. So it's not that I did not answer his question, but if it is about the prophecies or genealogy, I will refer you to the people who are more expert in those areas that I am. But to me, is the most important is the message that I am here to give you. The message is a message of unification and unity of our religions. So now we open the room. If you have any question about the teachings, you know, go ahead, but go and see our plural and understand them and love them and do not be negative about it. Go ahead, thoughts.
I was just wondering, Doug and I were talking the other day, and it seems that I know the community of light is the ideal situation, but in the meantime, for one who can't seem to obtain that, it appears that they set up a sentient environment as best they can, but they have to go out in the world to do their all the things a person needs to do to live, and it seems Maya either calls and they fall, or they fall into escapism by constantly running back.
Yes.
What are some things that a person can do when they're leaving the environment to help raise the consciousness of everybody else?
Okay, yeah, well, that is the nature of Maya. Out there, it's strong, it's powerful, it will attract you all the time. It tells you, oh, no, that's okay. You don't have to go to the reminder in the mission computer or read or meditate or anything. They are not that important. I'm strong enough to resist the temptation of the external world. That's what these things are given to you. That actually the reminder is a kind of a baptism. But the baptism? Baptism means to turn around, you know. And when you are in the world and the world is calling you to do their bidding, if you say, no, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to go to my computer and connect to the Hal Talk and go to mission room and do the reminder with the rest of the divines, that is baptism. That is what you're telling God, that, okay, I'll put you first, I'll turn around from the world, I'll go to do the reminder and be with the like-minded. If there is satsang or reading in the room and you have time, you stop going and spending your time with the people that they bring you down, come to the room, listen to those, read, with the people that are in the room, help them out. Wrap yourself into God. Okay, that is the only way. As in Do many times, is mentioned. If you don't take a shower a couple of days, what happens? You get dirty. You get very smelly, and you don't like yourself anymore. You know what you do? You at least take a shower every other day or something like that. Some people have to take a shower every day. Of course, taking a shower every day, it washes a lot of good oil of the body away. So we recommend at least take a shower every other day so you have some natural oil remain in your body, but of course don't get smelly or anything. So we can put even the spirit is become dirty faster than your body. Everything you see, everything you hear, everything you listen to is going to be affecting you. It is absolutely will pull you toward Maya. And Maya, it's been said, Maya is as strong and as powerful as God is. So, actually, probably some people say it's much stronger, but because Maya has more power than God does, because people don't want to come and turn around from Maya and come to God. So while the coming of light is not created, you have to wrap yourself into environment or the things that direct your mind to God, and that is reading, meditating, coming to the satsang, coming to the room, reading, listening, participating, especially participating. You learn much more by participating in a mission than just sitting on the line, on the sideline. So I recommend that you take advantage of the tools that mission has provided for this time. In the future, when we have many comings of light, you're going to have many rooms open all over the world. You can go to the one you like. And that's another thing we recommended our members, to go and open their own room. Just like one of our members did the other, a couple of days ago, by Maitreya, is the, Judah, and he's a Sayyid. So that was good. That was great. It was a very creative, and it was another room. He will do it the way he wants to do it. You might come to our room, and you don't like the format. We do it. You want to have an open room. Go open a room, just have a discussion with anybody who would come, don't let God anyone or don't bounce anyone, then just give a discussion. If you like it that way, great. Let all the religion come and talk about it, the religion, but at the same time direct them to see how their religion falls in what we have here. So there's many tools that's been given to you, but you have to have the initiative to go do it. And if you don't come to those things, of course, Maya is going to get you. So there's no doubt about that. Go ahead, Kyosha.
Yes, thank you very much, Maitreji. I had a question about sleep. What happens, really, when you fall asleep? And why is it necessary? I mean, I have so many things that I want to do for the mission. Why do I need to waste my time sleeping? Is it really necessary? Can I get to the point where I really don't have to sleep?
Sleep is a part of life. And God created it because when you fall asleep, actually it is kind of a when you defrag your computer, when you use your computer for a long time, it needs to be defragmented, and that is what happened to humanity also. When they spend the day in the work, they spend the day outside, they spend the day thinking, and the spirit being pulled so many different directions. The consciousness becomes scattered all over the place, and they will become tired, and they need rest. And in the rest, actually, when you fall asleep, you go to your subconscious mind, I mean unconscious mind. You go beyond the subconscious mind. And in the unconscious mind, you connect your mind to the universal mind, and in that level, it will be clean, the junk will be taken away, the good thing will be back, it's going to be completely put back together. That's why when you wake up the next day, if you have a good sleep and you have done your RAMs, everything in a correct way, you know, what is RAM actually? It is known that the eyes are flipped backward and come kind of a, you're looking on your seven chakras. Okay, and you're looking where seventh chakra is the seat of the spirit. Okay, you're really looking, your two eyes become one eye. Your third eye is open when you're asleep. And you will see there that you cannot see in a regular life. And of course, in a universal mind, you know, do give us indication of our problem. That is the dreams that sometimes we have. And there are three kinds of dreams that we talked about before. You can read about it. The second one is the one that unconscious mind, which is, we call it God, or God conscious, or God mind, gives you a solution to a problem, day-to-day problem, that you can look at it and see your psychological complexes that you can overcome. Okay, and those are, that's why it has been recommended. After you wake up, you can write your dream and then analyze it. What is this dream is talking about? And if analyze it, you remember, you know, in the dream you were shy, for example. You remember, oh yeah, I was shy 2 days ago when I gave that lecture. I was shy a month ago, 6 months. Little by little, you remember that there is the shyness. There is something in you that makes you shy. And then if you go deeper, you know, you will realize might in your childhood or from previous lifetimes, something happened to you that made you shy and you overcome it. So sleep is very important, and it's not true that not sleeping will help you do more. Actually, if you do not sleep, you do less. But if you meditate, the more you meditate, the less sleep you need. You see, actually, meditation is a sleep in a way you are aware of what is happening in unconscious mind. Okay, so in that level you will gain more and more power or awareness of your unconscious mind, so you don't need to go to sleep to put things back together and defragment it. Just like you have having a programming computer that whenever you don't work with it, it defragments it right away after 2 minutes, 5 minutes, you don't do anything. So you don't need to do it overnight. So the more you meditate, the less meditation you need, the more you can get done. So if you want to get a lot done and you think that sleep is a waste of time, then meditate a lot.
I wanted to follow up on this question, Maitreya. I noticed sometimes it happens if I'm very tired or something, and I have a few minutes to lay down, say 10 or 15 minutes, and sometimes I'll just sleep for maybe even 5 of those minutes, but I notice I wake up and I'm so very refreshed. Does it happen?
Yeah, that is a very good question. Actually, as you meditate more and more, as I said, you don't need sleep much, because your subconscious mind becomes smaller and smaller, and your unconscious mind becomes larger and larger. You get in touch with your unconscious mind, and subconscious mind is really the problem. The less subconscious mind you have, the more you're connected to unconscious mind, and therefore you don't need as much sleep. And what you explained, we call technique. It is if you're really tired, lie down in your right hand side, and put your head on a pillow or something, and just stay there for 15 minutes, and then you wake up or come out of it, you will be very, very refreshed, and you almost feel you have slept for a long time. But probably it's going to be harder for the people who do not meditate a lot, and it's not going to help them as much. But as you meditate more, as you meditate more, and in the comings of life, probably eventually, maybe we can just eliminate the sleep altogether, you know, because I personally sleep around 3-4 hours a day, and people here know me closely, they know that I do not really sleep like regular people who go to bed at 9 and wake up at 6, 7 in the morning. You know, I sleep here and there 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, but not very much. So meditation is the key, not to overcoming too much sleep. Go ahead, Tragedy Comedy.
Throughout the history of the Bible, the Old and New Testament, it seems to be a pretty cohesive to those who believe the New Testament. It seems to be a pretty cohesive unfolding of a plan, and the plan, you know, you said that you pay attention, or that the essential message of Jesus Christ that was important. What do you consider the essential message? Because most people that I've been around, and what I get from the study, is the essential message is the death, burial, and resurrection. The sacrifices in the Old Testament were a type and a foreshadow. There was this problem of sin that it is like ability to do good within ourselves. And so that the death is an essential part of Christianity, and we're also warned by Paul not to take another gospel, that we are to stand fast in the gospel that was delivered to us. And I'm hearing you say that the importance is reconciliation of all the religions. I'm confused. Could you speak on that?
Sure. It is a very loaded question. It has actually have probably 5-6 questions in it, which has to be really opened up and made to each question, you know, what is related. Okay. One of your questions is that crucifixion and resurrection is the most important theme of the Christianity. And therefore, if you do not believe that he died on the cross, it completely destroyed the whole idea of his crucifixion and resurrection and the belief of the people. And the other question is that Paul told everybody not to accept another, you know, gospel. And what I was saying was, the gentleman was here, was asking about the difference between Islam, that says Christ never was, he didn't die on the cross, and the belief of the Christians that he did die on the cross. I was telling him, and then he was saying to people that we do not believe in crucifixion. We do believe in crucifixion. There is no controversy that he was crucified. He was put on the cross. The nails were put in his finger. He did suffer and all that. But did he die on the cross? That is a controversial item that not only Muslims don't believe in it, also there is a group called Rosicrucians. They don't also believe that he died on the cross. And therefore, they believe that he it seems to them that he was dead, and therefore he rose after 3 days, because he never was dead anyway, and he continued his mission for years to come. Okay, the other question is that you say most people believe. I suppose that most people, you mean Christian, believe in that belief, and you quote Paul, that he said such things. Okay, and Christ himself said, the disciple is not greater than the master. And therefore, you have to go to the master to see what did he say is important, what is more important. Even when he healed people, when he did the miracle, that wasn't even important to him. He said, don't tell anyone. I just did it for you. I did it for your own faith to grow and accept me as who I am. He said, don't go. And so the miracles weren't important to him. Later on he says, if I heal you, if uncleanness leaves and brings up seven more because the house is clean and the unclean, now the state of the man is going to become worse than it was before. Therefore, even healing other people should not be done, because when you heal someone, they don't know how to heal themselves, and the uncleanness goes and brings seven more. And see, there is a lot of this Christ taught that it is not followed or understood with his follower. Okay, if the cross, Christ is the one that we have to listen, not to the disciples, then how was it even close disciple of this, of Christ? He didn't choose him as the rock that he will build his church on him. But now, his church is built on him. You know, people listen to Paul more than Peter. Peter was the stone that he built his temple or religion. So that is why you have to be very, the Christian have to think about this thing very carefully. See, who are we following? Are we really following Christ? Are we following the Peter that Christ chose to put his church on, or are following Paul that he's had his own idea? He actually, cross-prosecuted Christian for a long time, and suddenly he received this vision. How do we know what that vision was? Was it really from Christ? Or if the vision was given to him by not a very good spirit? And what Paul says, many things Paul says, is not according to what Christ taught. That's what he said. We believe on those red parts of the New Testament, where Christ completely directly said those words. And even Jefferson, the president of the United States, the founder of this country, was amazed of how much thing is in it that doesn't make sense. And he took all the dogmas and everything out of it and put the essence of it as a Jefferson's Bible. I don't know if you have heard about it or not. I probably recommend read that one. Jefferson is a pretty respected person in this country, at least in the United States. Refer to him, he even couldn't believe what Paul is talking about. Okay? So we can see that all these things, and also Christianity was affected with the Roman Empire and the Greek and European cultures and even Persian Zoroastrian religion and many others. So you have to really study this thing very deeply, and then also read our Revelation, the Holy of the Holy Spirit, and look at what is being said over there. And at the end, I hope you come to the same conclusion that Christ's teaching was different, much different than what Paul taught. I'm not saying everything Paul says is not correct. Actually, the people who teach, but they are not a pure channel of God, they have a lot of truth, but also they slip in a couple of untruth into it, and that is what they become false prophets. Okay? That's all. So we have to recognize and realizing what Christ taught. He said, no disciple is greater than master, and he was the master. Okay? You cannot listen to anybody else. So we have to what? Actually, there is a great similarity between Paul and Baha'u'llah in the religion of Baha'i. Bob comes and brings the religion, and Baha'u'llah comes later and says, no, I am the one. You have to listen, and everybody listen to him more than the original prophet. That's why, again, in Baha'i teaching, we refer to Bob as greater than you know, his predecessors. Both of them brought Paul brought Christianity to the West, and Baha'u'llah brought Baha'i teaching to the West. This is a lot of similarity between Bab and Christ, Baha'u'llah and Paul. And Bab was also shot at and killed. You know, Christ was crucified. And another point is, if you read the Old Testament, God promises to two sons of Abraham two promises that from each of them there is a prophet is gonna come. Okay, from the Ishmael, the prophet is gonna come. This is Prophet Muhammad, and from Isaac, there is gonna be a prophet come that was Christ. If that is true, then how can we only accept Christ and say not? We're not going to accept the next prophet. This Christ said is going to come. So there is a lot of things humanity have to learn, and actually a lot of things humanity have to unlearn, you know, before they can see the vision and work of God and the hand of God of bringing all these revelations and truth to humanity to this point. So again, I recommend you go read the book. And if you have any questions, your question is wonderful, and you put it in such a beautiful way that we can discuss it. It's a very open place here, we can discuss all these things. But reconsider your beliefs, and if you do that, you probably find a lot of things that are taught in the churches, and in the Christianity, in Muslim, in Islam, in every religion that is not the original teaching. Go ahead, Dustin.
Yes, I can heard you right. Is the unconscious mind the same as the universal mind?
Yes, you have to correct. The unconscious mind is the universal mind. That is the mind of God. And that is that exactly we are aiming at. That is where we have to connect ourselves. In the universal mind or the unconscious mind, there is also three levels of mind. And one of them is the memory of the universal mind in the manifested level, and that memory is what a lot of people call Akashic records. And in that memory, everything happens in the universe is being stored, and therefore that is why when God sends the prophets, he gives the access to the prophet to these memories, and they can bring the truth that has been lost in the past. Because one of my greatest job right now is just keep this teaching in the purest form possible. You know, because everybody who comes to the mission, everybody who brings something to the mission, everybody who come here and ask the question and go and put it in the out of context, you know, they are trying to bring their own, you know, understanding to my understanding and God's revelation. And I can't blame them, because you know, we know very well in psychology the law of perception is everybody have the different glasses with different colors in their eyes, and they see the world differently. So I can't blame them, but at the same time I have a hard time, or not a hard time, but I have a heck of a lot of time, I guess, to get this teaching in the purest form, and then tell people, well, your way is not completely true. They don't usually like it, but you have no choice, you have to tell them that's what it is. So, yes, the universal mind and unconscious mind is the same. The subconscious mind is what is created during this lifetime and many lifetimes, and that is what our fears, attachments, desires, and subconscious actions come. We react to the situation differently because of that subconscious mind. We don't see the will of God in it, because subconscious mind is blocking the will of God to reach us. So the idea is, as we meditate, we dissolve the subconscious mind and become closer and closer to unconscious mind or the mind of God, and eventually when we break away from the subconscious mind, we no longer have those fears, attachments or desires, and Maya can get you. Okay, go ahead, Kyosha.
And if you see this mentoring, prophet or avatar?
Okay, prophet is the person who has been prophesied to come for a long time. Usually it doesn't happen every day. It is very rare occasion, and he usually is come here with the clear signs from God and clear prophecies that he fulfills. To this point, every prophet who came to humanity, they fulfilled the prophecy about them. For instance, Prophet Muhammad fulfilled that he's from the Ishmael, okay? Because the prophecy was said, you know, a prophet will come also with the children of Ishmael. Christ came with from the King David and Isaac, because God promised Isaac that there is a prophet, he's going to come from him. Bob came with the clear prophecy that he is going to be from the lineage of Prophet Muhammad, and he was. And now I am here with the clear signs of the fulfillment of all the prophecies before me. Okay, because this is the seventh revelation. This is the explanation of all religion before it and unification. All of them, sounds like God also wanted that all the prophecy also is being fulfilled through this vessel, and therefore it is not something, you know, I'm going, oh, such a wonderful person I am that I fulfilled all prophecy. This is to glorify God. Because God said he's going to send such a person with all the signs, and he did it. Therefore, if he did it, God exists and he is in control and he's sending all the revelation, and now he put them all together and he's here. And therefore, you can see prophet doesn't just come, you know, every day or even every 100 years or every 200 years. Of course, this is an accelerated recently, but it is a very rare occasion, and usually there is a long prophecy of his coming, and when he comes, he fulfills and he becomes the mouthpiece of God. Avatar, there are two approaches to understanding avatar. Is when you meditate and you reach a very high level of consciousness and eventually reach pure consciousness and become one with God, then you have overcome the world. It sounds like you shouldn't come back anymore. You know, you made it. You went to God. But as we said, God said, I'm not going to keep you here. You know, I'm going to send you back. Then you come from Godhead. When you reached it there and you come back and God sent you back to this, such a people, they are called avatar or God-man. And of course, these people, you know, again, still you know them by the fruit. You know, you can't just make some ashes and say, I'm an avatar. No, you have to follow the eternal divine path. You have to pay the comings of life. But you're good at it. You're ready to sacrifice with no problem. Okay, you're ready to surrender and submit to God's will with no problem. You are a universal beast with no problem. Okay, so that's how you know them. You know by their fruit. You can say, no, I'm an avatar, but, well, you know, this religion is better than that religion. The moment you said that, you're out of being avatar, okay? Because you are discriminating between God's revelations. Okay? So you can see avatar reach pure consciousness and then come back. Of course, there are also some people who are perfect masters. There are the people that they meditate, they reach Godhead, but they say, no, no, thank you. I can get coming, but there's a lot of people, you know, still waiting, you know, to reach this state. I postpone my own salvation by returning and going to help the rest to reach pure consciousness. Those also, you know, by the truth again, they will see this teaching, they will realize the beauty of it, they see the fragrance of and the wonder of God in it, and they say, yeah, I want to be a part of that. That's what I want my whole life, you know, to see there is only one God, there is only all this revelation came from him. You know, therefore, if you see that, then if you're not avatar practice, you are a very high soul. Okay, so you come and join and continue. The difference in prophet is very rare. It doesn't happen very often, and usually they fulfill the prophecy. Avatar can be anybody who wishes to do that. Does that make sense? Okay, go ahead, Brother Frank.
Yes, thank you, Trey. I had a question I thought might benefit Tracy's comedy, but I see she's gone. But I'll ask anyway. I know you indicated that prophecy being fulfilled through God. An example was the prophecies of the coming of Esau or Jesus, the prophecies of his crucifixion and resurrection, and the miracles all of these.
Interesting.
prophesied out in the Old Testament prove the existence of God. But more importantly than these sense of the teaching of Christ, either of Christ, could you sir please expound on the essence of the teachings of Christ, his message, please?
Christ, you know, put an example for humanity that you cannot create, you know, a good environment if, you know, you're not willing to sacrifice, you're not willing to share, you're not willing to give up yourself. What does it say? The greatest thing a man can do is put their life for their friends, and you know, for another man, put down their life, for, you know, down for another friend. What's that? It's sacrifice. What did he do? He suffered, you know, suffered tremendously. You know, he had the beautiful teaching, and he brought them the, you know, the message of kingdom, and that and tried to purify their religion and attack their dogmas and religious belief that no longer were good. And they wanted to hear that. And instead of saying, yes, you have great firm and you have great the politics of the day, they didn't accept what he was saying. It was not correct, not politically correct to say what he was saying. And that is why they opposed him and eventually crucified him. And of course, Christ had a threefold mission. The first one was a sacrifice to put an example for humanity that to create the communion of life, sacrifice is necessary. Sacrifice does not mean to go to the cross. It means to share, not being self-centered, not being selfish, but be able to give up yourself to the community and say, okay, I'm a part of this community, I benefit from this community tremendously, I give something back to the community, and also I will share from myself, and I am active. If the community of life needed somebody to put their life down, you know, of course, you know, probably somebody in that level might do that, but it's not required. You know, it's actually our teaching is very simpler than that, very easy, much easier than that. Just share of yourself. It's a very simple thing. It's not that far. But that was the message. Message was sacrifice, not being self-centered, be able to share. And also, Christ gathered the people, as it was prophesied by Israel, that when the Shiloh come, he will gather the people. And he did. He gathered the children, the house of Israel, the northern kingdom, who left the northern kingdom and went to the north and eventually west and came to Europe and eventually ended up in the United States. Where the most Christians are. Most Christians are north of Jerusalem, Russia, Europe, and United States. So he gathered the people. So he did. That's why I said many times, I'm not worried about this mission is going to get done. It's not up to me. You know, God promised many times in the scriptures that he's going to do it. He is going to, you know, bring a prophet from Isaac. He did. He's going to bring a prophet from Ishmael. He did. He's going to bring another prophet from the lineage of Prophet Muhammad. He did. Now he said, you know, he's going to bring the seven seals and he's opened the book with the seven seals. And he did. And he said, after that is done, it's going to be done. His kingdom will come. And that is where we are at. So we are at the beginning of the kingdom. We are working toward creation of the coming of life and establishment of this kingdom. That's why I'm not aware. If you come to this mission, welcome. You live good life. It's just as simple as that. But if you come here and you help and you are a great soul, you will see the beauty of the mission. And you have no choice. You say, I have no choice but to follow this teaching because it is the last revelation of God and God sent it to humanity. And I want to be in the latest revelation of God. I don't want to just hang into dogmas and religions that doesn't make sense anymore. I will be with you, my Maitreya. What can I do? Then we'll go from there together. So, he gathered the people, which is the Christians, and he also released the grace. That's why most Christians are saved by grace. That is true. To this point, they have. They They really didn't do the namaz, they didn't do the reminder, they didn't go hajj or sacrifice anything. You know, the only thing is believe in Christ and you're saved. And they were. But to this point, okay, that grace is now only goes to those who do to the reminder, who do, you know, meditate and follow good diet and eventually realize God's will and follow the eternal divine path. They will receive the grace. Therefore, we can see that Christ did fulfill all three aspects of his vision. And therefore, he was God's child, son, as a way of presenting his spirit on earth. So was Prophet Muhammad. He also presented the spirit of God on earth. So was Bob and all the prophets of God who brought the spirit of God to earth. But no other prophet manifested the spirit of God as fully as this revelation. None of them brought the whole thing together and hold nothing back. So this time is absolutely a flood. Maybe that's why most of people can understand it, because it's a flood so vast and big that, you know, it's absolutely amazing. I hope that makes sense to you. Go ahead, little one.
My question is in regards to the community of life. As I understand it, our job, our human job, is to come to personal unity within ourselves and with God, regarding the spirit of each of the religions, learn from the emphasis each one has to offer, and then move forward to the next level.
Little one, your microphone, your sound went very bad. We couldn't understand what you're saying. In the beginning of your question, however, we understood that you're saying that, the path is everybody know themselves and become one with themselves, and that is the end of that. If the question is that, the answer is that is a New Age way of thinking. It's also the way of thinking of the mystical path that they said, just meditate, don't worry about it. You know, like the, I knew a guru, that was his thing. But just meditate, don't worry about it. And that was, of course, I believed in him in the beginning, and at the end, of course, when this revelation came, I realized, oh no, you have to worry about it. Actually, you will not reach your salvation unless all other unit consciousnesses also have reached their salvation. That's what, you know, the Bible says, I'm the first and the last, the Alpha and Omega, beginning and the end. You know, you cannot go there, you know, by yourself. And that is actually part of the message we're giving to humanity, that you have to direct the energy or realization you have toward the creation of the communities of life. That absolutely is different than the teaching of the many mystical paths that says, okay, you go meditate, go to the mountain, forget about this world and do not be worried about it. God says, no, that is not good. Actually, that's what he says. You think you are neither cold and hot, you know, and because you think and you think rich and need of nothing, I will screw you out of my mouth. How many people have reached Nirvana for the last 2,500 years? You know, Buddha reached Nirvana 2,500 years ago. You know, how many people have you seen reach Nirvana or reach the, you know, pure consciousness? And so those teachings is a part of our teaching. What you have is not incorrect. He is correct. You have to meditate. You have to become one with yourself. You have to realize your path within the eternal divine path. But there is an umbrella path, an umbrella kind of a teaching that covers every person's other person's path. And that is the eternal divine path. So what you have spoke here is the teaching of the mystical path, it is teaching that don't worry about anything else, but worry about yourself. And according to this revelation, which is supported with the prophecies and God's words, which is scriptures, it is not acceptable. That is not the path. The path is eternal divine path. After you meditate and by having your spiritual forces, you direct that toward the creation of the community of life. Go ahead, Brad.
Yes, in the opening of the seven seals in the modern times from Noah to Maitreya, each one of these seals is opened by the first begotten son. And my question is, in between that time, we also have Shiva, Moses, Krishna, and Buddha. Do we consider them also the first begotten son?
Well, they call in the mystical path and Hindu religion, and because the mystical path is so vast and covers so many aspects of human life, there is a possibility that the first begotten son came many, many times and perfected their religion or revealed the part that was lost or explained something wasn't explained before or was necessary in that time period for them. That is why we put all those under the mystical path or Hinduism. And even Buddha, a lot of people say, why don't you put Buddha in a separate place as another seal? But really, if you look at the Buddha's teaching, it's very similar to Hinduism. Actually, Buddha was a reformer who brought he purified Hinduism and tried to make it much more closer to the truth of the mystical path. And he had enough of so many gods in Hinduism that each person followed one god, the other, and separated people so much that Hinduism is fragmented into many, many gods and followers and all that. And somebody told him, how about God? And he said, don't worry about gods. Just meditate and know yourself. And now, later on, they say that Buddha didn't believe in God. It's not true at all. He never said that there is no God. He just said, don't worry about them. Know thyself. Go to the Nirvana. That's why he didn't make Nirvana a God. He just wanted to get rid of all the gods, you know, in the religion that he came from, because he just had enough of so many gods that create so many confusion for the follower, and said, don't worry about those gods, and just try to come to Nirvana. And then Nirvana, of course, some people say it means nothingness, and of course it doesn't mean nothingness, it means the purest form of consciousness. So we can see that Buddha kind of a reformer who came to purify Hinduism, and later on, of course, they have made statues of him, and again, made the same thing that he said, don't do. So we can see that religion changed, God must creep into them, human minds like to visualize things, but the highest God is formless, invisible, nameless, and eternal, and that is what we call fine. Formless, invisible, nameless, and eternal. And all the prophets and the great teachers who came in a mystical path, they are all put on the mystical path. Shiva, Krishna, and all the teachers who came in that period, because mystical path is so vast. In that essence, you have to find your path. In that essence, you meditate to see what is it in me that I can bring to the eternal divine path. But in the eternal divine path, after you realize who you are, what is your abilities, what you can do for the eternal divine path, then you say, okay, I can bring that to the community. I can bring that to help the community. I will sacrifice, I will surrender something to God. Actually, if you realize who you are and why you are here and what you can do, that is kind of submitting yourself to the will of God, instead of saying, no, I want to do those things, I don't want to do what God wants me to do, and become universalist and all that. So, mystical path have a lot of teaching in them, a lot of prophets and great souls came and brought a lot of wonderful thing into it, but they are all put in one category, including Buddha. I hope that makes sense. Also, there are a lot of Sufis, great Sufis. We don't consider them as a prophet, or some people that they brought, you know, great revelation to humanity, you know, know, and or a lot of people in Christianity, a lot of saints, they were great souls, and they realized great things. We don't consider them as a prophet and all that. Go ahead, Austin.
My question is around the same area as Brad's. All of the seals, except for seal 6, appear to have come from the Son of God. I was just wondering, I guess the reasoning or the purpose for this was a non-diverty into consciousness, or what purpose, what, basically why the 6 seals didn't come from the same source, is my question. Sorry.
Yeah, very good question, actually. It's, the answer is yes, that seals seem to be an exception, isn't it? Sound like all seals, you know, were prophesied or came from the, you know, same lineage and all that. And some of the 6 seals come from India, which has never been, you know, a place that prophets came from or brought any, you know, beside the mystical path was Hindu religion. Of course, if you study Baba's you know, revelation and the people who follow him, they have a lot of prophecies that has been fulfilled by Baba, and they believe he was the reincarnation of Shiva. He purified the Tantra meditation, and he has a long list of the prophecies and the foretelling and the wonderful thing he did during his life and all things. So in a sense, he's not completely just another guru or another revealer of the, you know, something that is based on Hinduism. But he revealed a lot of things that is not Hinduism at all. Actually, he was very exception to the most of the gurus that he came from. And so he fulfilled a lot of things that also make him legitimate person to bring a new teaching to humanity. And beside that, that was the only spiritual organization that I ever, you know, joined. So when I joined that organization, I even didn't know I'm joining it. As the story in my life tells you, you know, how I just pushed into it. So we can see that you know, there is he has a special place in the greatest sign, and he brought the teaching of the 6th seal. And also the eternal divine path was really finished by the 5th seal. You know, the 6th seal was bringing who's an elect, and he very well explained something he calls Satvikra. So we can see that the 6th seal is very a special place it has on it, but if you study the Ananda Marga and Baba, actually somebody was talking to another person on Ananda Marga in the room, and that person, which usually the Padmargis, were telling about, you know, what Baba has fulfilled from the expectation of the Hindus and the people who follow Shiva and all that. So he did fulfill the prophecies, but it is kind of a very special person in the 6th seal. And if you go to the probably website of Ananda Marga, I think it's anandamarga.org, and probably you can find more about him and what he did. I hope it answers your question. Let's read what Little One says. After we make our way through the different religious teachings and moving toward the feeling, the commitment of life. Okay. Could you start your vision of how community of life looks or begins in a small town, America? Yes, absolutely. Actually, that is one of the beauty things about the community of life. You can have your community anywhere you want. You know, anywhere in the world, you can have a community in a building with a 12 couples, or you can have your community in a small town, you know, according to what is explained in our teaching. And it's absolutely, it's between that 6 couples. We recommend that each community consists of 6 couples, six man and woman married couples, because we believe that kingdom is will be based on the pure married couple, and you can do that anywhere you are. What is your culture and background doesn't matter. Actually, you start, you can study the culture, and as you read our teaching and expand yourself, after you do the reminder, actually, you don't blame Muslims anymore, but you go up and down. You see, wow, that is a yoga posture that helps you to awaken your spiritual forces, and so you don't, when you chant and dance Hari Om Shri Ram, you don't blame Hare Krishna people. Why, you know, they do that? Because it explains what it is. So you can start where you are. You don't have to jump any ropes or any hoops or anything. You can start wherever you are and start small and expand that, and as you expand that, you read. But we recommend you read those. We recommend you understand the teaching and expand and open yourself into the other cultures and realize what they do. And hopefully, eventually, we're going to have a universal culture, which is God's culture. It is not any specific tradition, but it is God's culture, and every human will follow that culture, and it's going to be wonderful. So yes, you can start that where you are, but understand our teaching, understand the thing we bring to you, and the whole community can become a community of light. You can create community, but if you're not following eternal divine path, it cannot be community of light. I hope it answered your question. If you have a follow-up, go ahead. Kyosha, go ahead, Kyosha. Yeah, meditation is when you close your eyes, you go deeper inside, and you try to get in touch with the higher self and the unconscious mind or Godhead or God, and in that level you try to listen to the things that you should become aware of. As I said, meditation is really in a sleep with being aware of what's happening. When you're sleeping, you lie down. That's why it is recommended not to sit in the place that you might fall asleep. Because you fall asleep, you're not meditating, you're sleeping. You're not aware of what's happening. So that's why yogis, you know, came to the idea of the lotus pose. Because in lotus pose, you know, you're pretty sitting in center, and you are, you know, you won't fall off very easily, and you won't fall asleep easily. Therefore, you will meditate. Okay? So meditation is a sleep, and in a way that you are simple or aware. If you can sit on the lotus pose, that is the greatest way to do it. Sit in lotus pose, keep your spine straight and your back and your head straight, so your kundalini can rise, and then start meditating in a Hari Om Shri Ram Om Namah Kevalam mantra, and eventually you can break through the subconscious mind is in control of your life all through this life and many lifetimes. It's not going to just let it go, you know. You're closing your eye and telling your subconscious mind, no, I'm going to be in control now. Subconscious says, oh yeah, okay. What did you do last night? Say, oh, what did I do last night? Oh, I did that. Oh, where did I go yesterday? Oh, yeah. Suddenly your mind is all wandering away, because that is what is in control of your life. That wandering mind is scattering you all over the place. When you start meditating, you are saying, no, I don't want to be scattered all over the place. I want to know who I am. I want to be connected to God. I want to return to Godhead. I don't want to let my subconscious mind to be in control of my life. Okay, the moment you say that, of course, subconscious mind doesn't like that. But subconscious mind has had control over you all your lives. Now, you are suddenly saying, no, I am the boss. I am the person who's going to take over you in my life, and subconscious mind is going to fight back very hard. That's why most of the people even don't want to close their eyes. Most of the people don't want to meditate. They don't. Most of the people think meditation is not good, not going to help them anymore. Or they have a lot of bad meditation. They write me, Maitreya, why am I having good meditation? You know, I sit there for hours and hours, but I don't have any meditation, good meditation. That is good. That means you have a deep subconscious mind, and it's not letting go of. And as you meditate more and more, eventually subconscious mind will relent, and you will be the boss. You will be the person in control. One of the thing that you said was subconscious mind like a small creatures all over your conscious mind, all over your subconscious mind, and they live in darkness and in hidden places as well as we don't know they exist yet. Therefore, you go and you meditate. The moment you meditate, what you do? You put the shit light on it. And he said, okay, I'm going to now not going to let you get away from anything and I'm going to get you out of your crevices or hidden places. So they're going to fight back, but if you keep the light on them, these creatures, they eventually going to die because they cannot stand living in the light, and light eventually will destroy them. So meditation is when you know yourself, and also you listen to God. When you close your eyes and you come closer and closer to God and you are quiet, what do? You listen to what God was have to tell you. Okay? Therefore, meditation is listen to God. Prayer is talk to God. Okay? Prayer, you sit in prayer and say, oh God help me, or I'll be good boy and from now on I'm gonna not gonna do whatever I did so far. I'm gonna, you know, be surrender and submissive to God and follow your will and all that, then you are talking to God. You are telling God what you, of course, He already knows. You don't have to talk to God. He's closer than, you know, you ever can be closer to yourself. So, but what you are doing in prayer, really, it is good for you, getting what is inside you out to God so you can see better. He doesn't need your prayer because He already knows you, you know. But when you put it out in a prayer, you can see yourself better where you went wrong or what you can improve on. If that is the path of perfection. Path of perfection is to become perfect every day a little. If you are perfect a little today from yesterday, are you more perfect? Yes, you are. You are a little closer to perfection. Little by little, as you overcome the imperfection and you go closer to perfection, you become perfect. And as Christ said, be perfect as your Father in heaven. Therefore, the goal is, some people say, no, we never can be perfect. But God said, be perfect as the Father in heaven. Therefore, you can become perfect. That's where it is. It's exactly what God said in here, writing the scripture, that you can be perfect. He also says, if you overcome it, you will become my son. Therefore, overcoming also means what? If you become perfect, you are my son. You and me are one, and we both are perfect, and therefore the process is meditating, getting close to what God wants, praying, realizing where you are going wrong, and perfecting yourself more and more to perfection. So God is not looking for perfect people. God is looking for people who want to be perfect. Does it make sense? Alright. Go ahead, Kiyosha. Question is, okay, there are a lot of people, they're working very hard for the mission. You know, they go out there and in the world and they try to, you know, support the mission, support themselves, support their families, and though they sometimes are overwhelmed with the amount of the work they have to do, and also they love to come here and participate in the chat room or get the books going or print them or send them out, and this and that. There's a lot of work involved. Of course, hopefully our number increases and people come and join the center, you know, less and less work will be for every person, so they have more time to meditate and awaken the spiritual force in a greater degree. But of course, work, if it is done with the ideation that you are doing it for God and God is doing it through you, and realizing you have a great mission and you are doing it for the mission, it should not become a burden. It is, of course, it's very good in theory, and I have come to the conclusion in the practice, a lot of people are having a hard time to practice this teaching, which is true, but the environment out there is so cruel and crude that it zaps the energy that you gain from the mission out there. But those people who come to the mission, I believe, they are very high souls already. They are been meditating and they are very close to true consciousness. And by coming here and realizing this teaching, therefore they don't have need too much of meditation, and they are pretty much close to, you know, where they should be, hopefully. And of course, they can work on themselves for sure. All of us need, you know, to become perfect as the Father is, and not all of us are, which is okay. As I said, God is not looking for perfection, but for those who willing to work on themselves to become perfect. Another thing is, we haven't even created community, one community of life really on earth yet. We are, as I said, we are calling the elects to come and join us, and elects of course are going to be the facilitating body. Facilitating body are the people who delay their own salvation for the salvation of the whole universe. Therefore, they are not concerned if they reach to pure consciousness in this lifetime or not. The most important thing is, what is the will of God for me in this lifetime, and how can I help His will to be accomplished? Therefore, you can see there's so many ways to look at the every situation, and therefore, they will wait until everybody reaches pure consciousness and they themselves will enter. They are the beginning and the end, and they will eventually reach pure consciousness. And their salvation, of course, is absolutely guaranteed, because they love God so much that God chose them to see this revelation and beauty of it, and they said, yes, that's what I was looking. Actually, everybody came to the mission almost have the same story, that I, from the childhood, was different. I did not accept the religion I was born in. I was looking for something more than dogmas they were, you know, putting, you know, in my mind. It just didn't make sense. Why there is everyone, there is God, why there is so many religions? Well, I was attracted to other religions. I was born Muslim, but I wanted to follow a Jewish religion. Or I was a Christian, but I became Muslim and then became, you know, Baha'is. Okay, it's just, you can see these people are the people, they cannot follow dogmas. They do not, no dogma. That is what the mission is, no dogma. Dogma has to go. In every religion, dogma has to go. That is what this mission is, purifying, getting rid of all the dogmas in all religions and purifying them. Therefore, we can see that we should not be concerned about our salvation, but be concerned about the mission, to get the mission done, and eventually our salvation is, you know, for sure. We have to create the facilitating body at this time. We have to create the body, the people, that they are strong, they are absolutely one-pointed, they are one, to create the hierarchy of the elects, and eventually create the community of light all over the world, and eventually connect this community together, and we bring the kingdom of heaven on earth, and we rejoice on it. Then maybe it's the time to sit and meditate and be worried about the salvation and going to pure consciousness. So at this time, we are not too much worried about that. We are worried about to get the mission moving and going and creating the coming of light and the kingdom of heaven on earth. That makes sense? Alright. Again, this mission is the revelation of the seven seals and the opening of the book sealed with the seven seals, and fulfillment of the all prophecies to this point. Go to our website. You will see that there is no other prophet ever had so many prophecies fulfilled through him, and the teaching is absolutely amazing. Go ahead, Dustin.
Yes, regarding an altar that one would build in their community, I have received one that I'm working on right now, but I don't know. It's not in Revelation, in the Bible, or Quran, or anywhere that I can find. Is there anything that would be sort of recommended with building an altar? Because if this is going to conflict with mission teaching, I wouldn't want to do that.
Well, altar is a symbol of the temple or a point in your house that will bring your attention or intention toward God, because any time you look at it, it's, you know, God is there and it's supposed to be present in the altar. Even greater than having an altar, of course, having a meditation room, which is completely set up for meditation and inviting other people to come and meditate with you and sharing the greatest sign and the teaching with them. Altar in every religion also exists. In Islamic tradition, they have a masjid, which has a center, usually is built with a, actually recent masjids are built with the gold and the places that people, they even kiss the doorknob and they go in and they, you know, go around the center, which is kind of a, an altar for them. And also, you know, Christians also have the cross in the thing and all that, and the Jewish people, they have the podium with the Torah on it, right?
Yes.
And all that. But altar probably mostly came from the mystical path. Hindus have altars in their home and houses, and they have the picture of the gurus, and usually they cover the guru during the day because they don't want the unholy people or people that do not respect their guru very highly look at them, so energy might not change. I resisted having my picture in the website or giving it away to anyone because we do not believe that you should have any image beside God, but there was a lot of requests and eventually I gave in. But if you have my picture, usually read the back of the picture. It says that picture is just for your benefit, but God is formless, invisible, nameless, and eternal, and you have to go to Him and don't get attached to the picture itself, but to the spirit behind the picture or the spirit behind the prophet. So if you want to have an altar, probably it's a good idea to decorate the sign on it and then put some whatever nice thing you like to put, like a, incense or some candles and things like that. You like to put it, make it nice and nice smelling and pretty place to sit and meditate on it. But of course, the greatest sign should be emphasized more. Put the greatest sign in the center, sit in front of it, and meditate on the teaching of the greatest sign, what it means, what the revelation is, how the eternal divine path works, what's the, you know, creation of the comings of light, how the kingdom can come, how the prophets are fulfilled, how the revelation of God is on earth, and all that. An altar should help you. It's better to have an altar than have nothing in your house at all. Because altar at least reminds you once in a while, you know, oh yeah, I have to go to God. That is the goal of the life. The goal of the life is to become divine. The goal of life is not just to watch television 24 hours a day and forget about God and that energy that takes you away from that. So we can see that altar is helpful, but be careful not to get attached to the appearances, but the spirit behind the altar. I hope that makes sense to you. Go ahead, Kiyosha.
Did giving any kind of status for Buddha or Krishna at home can consider as something against the teaching of you? Thank you.
The whole idea is that the only formless, invisible, nameless, and eternal we unify. Fine, formless, invisible, nameless, and eternal. Any name, any picture, any manifestation in external world will separate man from man. It is a concept, it's very difficult for human to grasp. Prophets have come over and over, told them not to make the statue, not to give God the name. Actually, if you had altered the name of God in the time of Hebrews, you would be stoned, and even less than having a picture or a statue or something made of him to worship that statue. And of course, Quran has a very beautiful story about when Abraham was in the city, they were worshipping idols, and he was very opposed to idols and told them, you know, what is the idol you follow and worship. They neither can benefit you, neither can harm you. And the day we got lesson, one day they had a big celebration, so everybody left the city, and they left the temple empty, and Abraham went and took a big hammer and smashed all the statues and put the hammer in the hand of the big statue. And then when the people came back and they saw that what happened, they went to Abraham and said, "We know you did it." I said, "No, I didn't do it. The big God got very angry and just destroyed the whole other gods." And they said, "No, he can't do that. It's just a statue." He said, "Okay, well, if you can't do that, you know, why do you worship him? You know, what did the statue give you? It's just another way to separate man from man and humanity. So for any name, any manifestation, anything out there that separate man from man should not be acceptable, and hopefully this time humanity will understand that, and they worship God within themselves. As Christ said, worship God in your spirit. Close your eyes, and that is your temple. You don't need any external manifestation as a statue. Even the temple is there to unify humanity, because our temple has what? 6 entrance, and each person can come into the temple through their own door, and then when you go to the center, they are unified. They are one man, one humanity, one God, and they are unified. Therefore, anything that separates should score it, should be, you know, you shouldn't destroy or anything, impose your will on other people, but you have to educate them. That is what the mission is all about, education. You have to educate yourself and see the points we are making here make sense. It is something that will help humanity to become unified. Therefore, if we are opposing this, you know, the statue making, it is because it separates man from man and it is not good. Go ahead, Kyosha.
Thank you, Nataya. My question is about, you were talking about meditation and prayer, answering that earlier. And I was thinking that it seems like there's two kinds of prayer. There's prayer when we go humbly to God ourselves and pray to Him and tell Him what's in our hearts. And then there's the kind of prayer that we do the reminder or the mosques do, the namaz and so forth. I was wondering, and I know you touched on this a little bit today, but I was wondering about the difference between those two prayers, those kinds of prayers. Is the effect the same, or is there some differences in the way they work for a person? Thank you.
But a reminder, I don't consider reminder as prayer. As the name indicates, it's a reminder. It reminds us of, you know, we pay our salutation to the Divine Father and all that. And it's a kind of a reinforcement of why we are here for. The goal of life is to become divine and all that. So it is a part of reminding us of our mission, of why God has created us and how many great souls have helped us to come to this point, and we have to, you know, go ahead and understand that and surrender something ourselves to the will of God and all that. But there are prayer, of course, you know, that we humbly go and humble ourselves to God and we ask Him for guidance and greater degree of understanding Him and His will. That is the best prayer to do. The prayer that we ask people for God for things to give us. And that is, of course, is not the highest kind of a prayer, because God already knows what's good for us and what's not good for us. And if we pray for things, then, you know, we are bringing the energy lower than, you know, highest energy, that we trust God, that God is going to give us the best. Of course, we're going to do our best in life, but we trust God, that God knows. Of course, we become closer to God, He knows much more what you need and what you don't need, and there's a prayer that you demand that God bless you or something. Of course, that is not the best way of prayer, because that means that, you know, you think God owe you something, or that, and God owes nothing to no one. God, we are the one that owe Him everything that we have or we are, and we have to realize why we have been blessed and we are not blessed anymore, and correct that delusion of blessing and become blessed again, because God, you know, will bless us anytime we follow His will and His grace. So, some people even pray for other people, you know, even better than praying for other people is to teach them how to pray, and so they can pray for themselves, and instead of praying for them, it's not a big job. Of course, if the person is almost dead, of course we can pray that God do whatever His will and is good for that person. And if they cannot pray in a situation, is it good for commission yourself to become a prayer person for that person? But still, you just ask whatever is God's will is to be done. So prayer is something that is being misused and abused a lot with a lot of people, and we have to realize the best prayer is, you know, see ourselves, how we can improve ourselves and come closer to God, and that kind of the prayer of care, of course, make us go toward the perfection, and that perfection is the goal of life. Okay. I hope that answers the question. Okay. Well, we are almost at the end of our time. I'll give you everybody a minute. If you have another question, go ahead and ask. Otherwise, after a minute, we will close the door. Thanks for coming. I hope you enjoyed it. Go to our website, read our teachings, see that God's will is now to become one in His new revelation, and tell everybody. Again, I give the answer, this revelation to you. It is now your revelation, and as I am a messenger to give this to everyone, now you are each a messenger to give this to everyone you know, or you come in contact with, therefore spread the word to the end of the world. So may humanity come together and see that there is one God, one humanity, and one earth, and all religions have come from Him. There is no separation between them. None is higher or lower. And we have to forget about dogmas and see the beauty of God that has done this. And now His glory indeed has come. Salaam alaikum.